This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 51, recorded live October the 1st, 2014, where we'll talk about the latest Azure news.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right, I see. How are things?
Doing good today. How are you doing?
Not bad, thank you. Not bad. What's been going on in your world?
I am heads down in code lately, and it's been it's fun. So I'm working on our startup right now, a bunch of curb stuff, but it's I tell you what, man, it's cool.
Getting nerdy.
It really is. And you know, it is all like, I've been making sure that, you know, I took a step back and, you know, I've been doing a bunch of work on it recently for a while, but I've taken a step back and decided, you know what? I want a good continuous development process, continuous development deployment process. So automated testing, I want, you know, good builds, I want good code checking quality, all that kind of stuff. And I've uncovered the world, or I shouldn't say uncovered, but I dove into the world of task runners and linting and doing hinting and stuff, and how to make this work with Angular. And in a nutshell, this is wicked cool. And I'd love to do an episode about this one day, just hardcore dev stuff. I want to do some blog posts about it. But basically, I'm using a tool called Gulp. It's based in JavaScript. It runs on Node, Node.js, but it basically lets you run tasks. And there's plugins you can install and configure the plugins to work your way. So for example, I have a plugin that I run that will take all of my TypeScript, compile it to JavaScript, I could have it generate the source maps, and also put in the type definition files if I was going to use those libraries somewhere else. I also have it run a TypeScript linter against my code and report errors and issues. I then have it run a JavaScript linter against the generated JavaScript, because sometimes things are different. There are ways you have to deal with dependency injection in Angular, and there's a way that you can completely ignore dealing with the dependency injection issues that you run into in Angular once you minify your code. And that's by explicitly naming the services and stuff you want to inject into your controllers and services and stuff. But I can leave all of that stuff out and just say which ones I want. And then I can run a special Gulp plugin that says ng annotate, and it examines all of my JavaScript and says, let me add an injection statement at the very end that will automatically do that for me.
You lost me at knob.
Yeah, it's cool. it's pretty cool stuff. It's nice because, I mean, as I'm sitting here working, I have a watcher going that in one window that as it gets like hinting and linting errors and stuff.
Yeah.
It keeps running it. It automatically runs all of my tests and all the browsers reporting errors and stuff. So
it just seems amazing that it was only a few years ago, like, and I know I sound like such an old fart when I say this, but it was only a couple of years ago, none of this existed, right?
Yep.
Like maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools were rudimentary, and the world has just flown past me at a great rate of knots and shot off into the distance, right? Especially in this whole front-end Divi, JavaScript, you know, front-end development world is just, I am too old to keep up with it, it seems. Or not focusing on it enough, I guess.
But yeah, and it's a lot of it, I wonder if like if the sentiment that you have is correct in the sense that I wonder if we're just late to the game when we kind of dive into it,
yep,
or if you are really jumping into something that over the last 2 years has just exploded, because like Angular has been around for 2 or 3 years.
I think it's probably both, right?
I think it's a bit of both. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a big driver of this is GitHub and how easy it is to collaborate on open source projects, because everything I'm doing for this build stuff, 100% of it is open source and community driven. And
yeah,
it's amazing how polished it is. So
that's cool.
I'm loving it.
That's really cool.
So what are we talking about today?
Oh, we're going to talk about Azure news. So we're going to do a bit of a wrap-up episode. There's been a bunch go on in the Azure universe. So we've got some Azure news to go through and all that sort of stuff. Hey, but before we get started, I just want to throw one quick thing in there. I rebuilt my PC this week, and I'm reminded of why my parents never do that. They go to a computer store, they go to a shop, or they go online or whatever. They specify what they want, usually with me on the phone to find out how many gigawatts of hard drive storage they need. And then they just buy it, and then they throw their old one out.
Mm.
And I put new stuff in my PC this last weekend, and I just wanted a new video card, but then that stretched to, oh God, now my video card won't work with my motherboard. Now I need a new motherboard, which then went to, now my motherboard won't work with my CPU that I had, so I needed a new CPU. So it turns out I pretty much rebuilt the entire computer. The only thing that survived was the RAM and the hard drives, of course. But other than that, so anyway, so I've got this new screaming PC at home, but I really enjoyed the tinkering with the hardware stuff. But man, oh man, like Windows installs really, really fast now. Yep. Like it's ludicrously quick, except after you're done. Like we're used to the mobile world where you just go to the app store and go clickety clickety click, get all of your apps and you're set up, right?
Yeah.
But the old style Windows apps, you know, like the desktop apps, they've all got different installers, they've all got a different process, and it takes ages.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've heard of this little tool called Chocolaty.
Oh yes, I have it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's sort of like a package manager for Windows apps. Command line driven and stuff, but you can go in there and you'd be like, you know, install Skype, install Fiddler, install this, install that, and it's like boom, 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 and that saved my bacon and a lot of time. But I don't know, just in general, I hadn't rebuilt my PC at home for probably a couple of years, and it really reminded me of how backwards installing desktop software is still. Everybody's got a different installer, right? It's a pain.
I got a question for you about this. Was it just one trip to the computer store?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
No way! Oh,
it's the first time it's ever happened.
It's like doing a home improvement project. It's like you get everything you need, and the next thing you got is five more trips that are for things that are anywhere from 50 cents to $8 at Home Depot.
Oh yeah. Oh God. And Home Depot, I live close to one, so it's real easy. But Fry's, where I went to go get the computer stuff, it's like a good 30-minute drive. So round trips are quite a long way. But there was a very nice man at Fry's who helped me. And he was like, I said, I want this video card and I want everything else that I need to make that work. And he was just like, you want this, you want that, you want this and that. And so I came out a lot poorer, but man, oh man, my PC was slow in comparison to what it is now.
Awesome.
Anyway, Azure News. So we've got a couple of things we want to wrap up. There's been a whole lot of news in the last month or so, and we've briefly talked a little bit about it over the last episode or two in dribs and drabs, but we thought we'd just sort of wrap it all up in a bow and talk about it a little bit. We've got some things around some price reductions, and we've got some stuff around some the Redis cache and Azure and stuff. So do you want to kick off and just go through a little bit of news on what's going on in the Azure price world? Or maybe we should play the price wars tune.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah, it's the cloud wars, right?
Exactly.
So they did, there was a lot of price reductions that went into effect on October the 1st of this year. And frankly, there are way too many to go through and explain all the differences, but I'm going to just read out a list and then we'll have a link where you can find a list of all the price differences. And then they even list out, here's the old, here's the new, and you can see the difference here.
Yeah, it's nice.
So for those of you who are listening, pay attention to this piece. I'm going to run through everything that was on the list. And you can, if you hear something that kind of piques your interest, then go check the price list. And if you don't hear something that you use, then it's not on the list because I wrote it all down. So here we go. What price reductions did they have? They have it around cache, CDNs, BizTalk, both server and services, data transfer rates, ExpressRoute, and as it relates to ExpressRoute, we have exchange providers, data transfer, and service provider price reductions. Around media services, they did price reductions on encoding, reserved encoding, and reserved streaming. Around mobile services, there were price reductions for both the basic and standard services. For multi-factor auth, they did reductions for per user and per auth pricing. They did price reductions for reserved IP address hours. They did price reductions for the scheduler, both standard and premium. A lot of drops on the SQL Server virtual machines that are available and all the different sizes and licenses. Reduction in storage transactions. Reductions on the transfer managers as far as DNS queries, health checks for both Azure and external endpoints are concerned. And finally, virtual network gateway hours. They did price reductions in all of those areas.
Wow.
I know people are going to ask right away, what about websites? What about blob storage? What about this? And it's, no, I didn't mention that because that wasn't on the list.
Gotcha.
It's way cool, man. They cut the prices yet again. So
yeah, you know, one of the ones that really stands out for me out of all of this, like you look at, go onto the into the price list and you see this and I was like, wow. And there was one of the express route providers, the I think it's the 10 gigabit per second one, which is the direct connection to Azure, right? So you can set up a connection straight into Azure and get direct access to it. It's called Express Route. And this one dropped from only $12,000 a month to $8,700.
Jesus.
That seems like a pretty good saving.
That's a 25% off. I mean, that's like when you're talking, you know, a billion here, a billion there, it adds up. But
yeah, that was, this one is the 1 gigabit per second. Sorry, not the 10. 1 gigabit per second dropped from $12,000 a month to $8,700 a month.
I apologize. My math is way off. That's not a 25% reduction. That's more like a 33% reduction.
There you go. So yeah, that's like that one really stood out. A, I had no idea it cost that much to begin with. And B, that seems like a hell of a reduction. So something got a lot more efficient in there.
Yeah. That one's, they're definitely growing that area a whole lot.
I think the general thing here is, right, there's something in here for everybody. Although you rattled off like a lot of different services, right? Whether you're doing like caching or media encoding or whatever, there's probably something in here for people across the board, and no matter what your type of solution. And so I think going and taking a look at the price list that we'll link to off in the show notes is definitely worth having a quick look through and seeing. No doubt somebody's stuck this in a spreadsheet and put the percentages of price drop beside them somewhere as well. So be able to see what's dropping the most. But it's, you know, as things get more efficient, the customer benefits.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say there's another one that they did, another update that they did here. It's around something called the Azure Redis Cache went into general availability. So you want to talk a little bit about what the Redis Cache is for people?
Yeah, I think we've touched on this in a prior episode briefly, but for those who weren't listening to that, a quick recap. So Redis Cache is an open source, in-memory, highly scalable, very performant caching system. Is that a good way to describe it? That was just off the top of my head.
Yeah, open source.
Open source is the key word there, right? And this is not a Microsoft thing, right? So it's used across all sorts of different providers, all sorts of different cloud hosters. It doesn't even have to be in the cloud. You can host it yourself if you want in your own environments and things. But so Azure offers Redis Cache as an option for in-memory, distributed, high-performant caching. And it's anybody that is building a large, scalable solution should be using something like Redis, right? There is no way to build a cloud-scale service or an internet-scale service without heavily relying on technologies like this anymore. It is physically impossible to get bits from the browser to a database and back again in the speed that you'd need to build a really highly responsive site, for example, without using something like this as kind of middleman or what have you for caching. And so it's been in Azure for a little while, but the news is that it's now generally available and also that they've updated pricing to go along with that. So sort of in summary, high performance, right? This is what you need to stick in your app to be able to put data into and read data out of in a very, very fast way. Works across nodes in your application. So say you've got 20 web front end roles, for want of a better word, or websites, then you can use a Redis Cache to read and write info out of across all of those nodes in a very performant and scalable manner.
Mm.
And so you can, you know, sync data into the Redis Cache and have it spread across your application sort of instantly.
Mm.
The good part about it is that it's, you know, it's a technology that's used in all sorts of different platforms and all sorts of different providers. So it's not Microsoft specific, right? Which means it's, you don't have to use a special library to use it. You don't have to just use it in Azure. You can bring code from other cloud services that uses Redis and use it in Azure if you want. I guess it's not proprietary is the right word I'm looking for, right?
Mm.
And you can, you know, you could provision it and use it and manage it through the Azure portal and things like that. Now in Azure, you get, it's available in two tiers, right? Basic and standard. So much like the nomenclature that they're using for like the new SQL things and websites and so forth. Basic and standard are the two offerings for the Azure Redis cache. The basic one, single cache node. And again, much like SQL, kind of good for test and dev, and but not sort of for product, like high production usage. Whereas standard is kind of like the mode you want to move into when you put a system into production. And it's got an SLA attached and things like that. So it's sort of more what you'd use for a production system.
Mm, very cool.
Yeah. Have you used this at all in any of your apps or looked at it before?
I've looked at it. I have not jumped into it just yet. But to be honest, yeah, I'm looking at using it for a current app that I'm working on right now, not just for proof of concept, but actual for the real stuff and you know, reading and writing to cache and letting it caching stuff on the back end back to the database. So
gotcha.
Yeah, I'm looking to play with it. I would like to put together a bit of a like a baseline test to show using it, writing straight to a database, writing straight to table storage, and then having Redis sitting in the middle and letting reading writing straight to that and letting it on the other side writing straight back to my persistent storage.
Yeah.
And just to have a good test to show the differences between all of them.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a fun one to do. I have not seen where someone else has done that yet. So
yeah, so that in terms of pricing and things, it goes from, you could start at about a 250 megabyte cache and go up all the way up to a 55 gigabyte cache. Which that's quite a lot.
It's quite a bit. I mean, you think about how big a lot of your databases are and you know how much stuff do you do constant reading and writing to, or what's the more you know high traffic stuff like your user tables and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
Man, being able to pin that kind of stuff to cache would be a huge performance boost.
Yeah. So you go from like at the 250 megabyte level, you could stick a lot of text in 250 megabytes. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And it starts at $17 a month. So that's if you use it for an entire month constantly. That's the basic service, or $41 for the standard service.
Mm.
So sort of $41 a month for a ultra high performance in-memory cache that you could stick a hell of a lot in for the benefit of highly available and highly performant site or application. That seems like a complete no-brainer to me.
Mm, very cool.
Yeah, so that's the good thing about this is Azure has had a few different caching strategies over the last few years. And this one seems to be the one that's really sticking from a popularity and a adoption point of view, because it's not something specific to Azure. It's like people know Redis for building highly scalable and performant websites and applications. And this is, you know, now been brought to Azure and is generally available, but it's not something proprietary. You don't have to go learn something new. And lots of people use it around the world. So it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's open source product. And so it's one that a lot of people use. And so it's smart that they have, it's not a Microsoft thing. It's just something, it's an Azure, it's an open source thing that Azure supports that I think is really, it's just very cool. It's a cool approach that they've gone with. And, you know, you go with what the market is using. I mean, I was a bit surprised when they told people that we're using the other caching strategies that they have in Azure, that they're sundowning those or sunsetting those and saying, you have to migrate over to Redis by this date, because we're going to shut that stuff off. We're not going to support it anymore. We're just going to go all in on Redis. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's really cool to see a company that has been so close to open source. I mean, that is one of the biggest, you know, thumbs up to it that you can see. So very cool.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So what else we got?
So a couple quick bits and that we can then jump back and talk about a little bit about some of them. But we've mentioned in the past, role-based access control is now in public preview. So that's giving people the ability to, you now don't have to have full access to your entire Azure subscription. You now can give other people in your organization more granular access to the subscription to have access to certain things or to create certain things. Just gives you more control, which is what you really would want. And then a couple other things like mobile services for .NET allows you to write services through the power of your like a web API project. That's all gone to generally available from public preview, as has the media services encoder and indexer that happened on October 1st. Those are now in GA as well. There are one or two things, though, that are worth kind of like, you know, chatting about just for a second. One of them is around the live streaming and content protection.
Mm.
So this is now in public preview.
Yep.
And what this does, this is Azure was used for the Olympics and the 2014 Winter Games in Sochi and the recent 2014 FIFA World Cup. They used Azure Media Services to do on-the-fly transcoding and encoding of content and delivery online, something that I guess Apple may have wished that they had when they recently did their big new iPhone 6 and iWatch thing where they had the issues there.
Ouch.
But what they did now, this is now available to people like us. We can actually go through and stand this up. So they've added something called content protection, which is a protection feature for premium video content.
Mm.
That's available, offers both static and dynamic encryption with a wide range of industry standard stuff, including PlayReady DRM or ClearKey Advanced or AES encryption for 128-bit encryption. I tell you, I'm an author for Pluralsight, and so I know that we have I record courses and publish them with them. And I have a Google alert set up to email me whenever it finds the name of my course in some hit online. And I get hits like it seems, unfortunately, within about 4 or 5 hours of my class going live. But then I have them almost every day of another torrent site that's ripped off my site or ripped off my content from Pluralsight. And they have a whole takedown thing that they deal with and piracy thing that they have to deal with. But you know, one thing that, you know, it keeps coming up is what about doing a watermark or something for the videos or doing something that makes it a little bit more secured. And I mean, I look at this as live streaming and content protection. And I'm like, man, that would be nice to have.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the requirements are for it on the client to, you know, what do you have to have to make sure that you can't rip it off and all that stuff. But I see that's a killer offering because that is a massive thing that you would want to deal with if you want to have content protection, and being able to have this as a cloud-based service just makes perfect sense. It's a great addition.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I briefly touched on this in one of the previous episodes, but it just brings like really complicated technology to the hands of everybody, right, that want to do this. And like I said before, it used to be in the hands of people that were doing big events. It used to cost an absolute arm and a leg to do this stuff. And now being able to do it through a service like Azure and things is extremely nice. Cool. So we've got some SQL news, bit of bits and bobs.
Yep.
Some faster VMs.
Yeah. So let me do the SQL one. Well, let me do the VM one first, and then I'll finish off with the SQL one. On the virtual machine side, what they've done in the past is we've had these A-series VMs. I know we talked about this very briefly in a previous episode, but I had a couple questions come in about it, so just kind of clarify here. We've got something called the D-series VMs now. We used to have the A-series, those are still around, but now we have the D-series. And the D-series, they're significantly more expensive than the A-series, but they're designed for like very high CPU dependent workloads, and they also have an attached SSD drive. Now, the big thing with this is that the CPU or the clock speed is faster on these VMs than all the A-series VMs. So that's one big difference. And so if you're doing a lot of calculations and stuff in your VMs, then that's one thing that you would want to look at. The other thing, though, is the SSDs. And this is the part where people first saw this and like going, oh, sweet, I'm jumping in, fast VMs.
Yeah.
The SSD is that temp drive that's attached to your VM when it starts up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the D drive. And that is, if for those of you who are not familiar with this, in IaaS, this drive is a volatile drive, meaning that when you shut down the VM, when you restart it, what was on that drive may not be there. It probably won't be there, actually.
Mm, I see.
And the reason why that's there for local temp storage. And so for the VM, it's used for these SSDs, this D drive, this is not stored in blob storage. This is not on spindles. This is used for like your memory paging in the OS. There's some capabilities in SQL where you can have SQL do its own memory paging, but do it to disk, and it could use this. If you're doing something that is fast replication, like a MongoDB that writes to the file system, and but you have it replicated across multiple VMs, this is another good scenario for that. So it is not I want to do SQL in Azure, and I want to put all my databases on this SSD drive. You don't do that.
Yeah.
The temp DB, that might make sense. But your master DB, your content databases that you have, that's not to go on this SSD.
Nice and quick temp storage.
Yeah, It's definitely needed though.
Cool.
Yeah, so, and the last thing we have is the SQL databases. So basically they're just some new tiers that they have. So now you have, they announced some tiers back in April of 2014. These are now generally available. They have a standard, a basic, and a premium tier. And the different tiers give you more uptime. Some changes that they've made since when it went to preview, they went from like 3.9s uptime to 99.9% uptime. Now it's 99.99% uptime, which is one of the highest in the database as a service industry. This is wicked cool. Another thing they've added, point in time restore. So with built-in backups, you can do up to a 35 days of data retention.
Nice. This has always sort of terrified me a little bit about cloud databases is, you know, when you've got a SQL machine next to you or in a server room, you're kind of expected to do the backups, right?
Yep.
You are expected to do the backups, right?
Who else would do them?
Exactly. But then the cloud, it's like, well, how often should I be doing them? Is it my job or is it somebody else's? And this sort of, for me at least, makes me feel a whole lot happier knowing that they've sort of nailed the process and I can go back to a point in time.
Yeah, agreed. Other things they had too, active GeoRep, standard GeoRep replication options. Those are available for some of the higher plans, also for both local and geographically dispersed secondaries. Larger database sizes, the max goes from 150 gigabytes up to 500 gigabytes. Auditing, that part is still in preview, but there's for additional security compliance. And then some extra new things that they have added since the April piece is a new S0 performance level. So with the new standard tier, they introduced a new S0 performance level to make it easier to transition from the basic plans to the standard plans. There are also some price reductions that I talked about those at the beginning of the podcast. And the other thing was that starting earlier in September, that they have hourly billing. So now the Azure SQL databases will move to hourly billing in all the new service tiers, which is another big change.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, that'll be pretty sweet.
Crazy news, man.
It's a lot to keep up with, you know? It's like if you're designing a new system, it's or a new app and things like that, you know, not just on pricing, but like what services are now available and what geographies and all that. It's a lot to keep up with. So I hope people are getting something from listening to us wrap up this news. And we've had a couple of people in the feedback, you know, give us that they like listening to the pod show because we kind of wrap these things up. So hopefully there's others that are getting the same from this. And hopefully we're helping a little bit to keep a little easier to keep up to date.
Yeah, hope so. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, that was a great set of news and lots happening in the Azure space. Like I said, I hope people are getting something from this. If you have a particular topic, we're still looking for ideas, so fire them in. But thanks again, AC. It was a good wrap-up, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Sounds good, CJ. You have a great day, and we will talk to everybody soon. Thanks for listening today.
All right, cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.